Hello, dear ones. We wanted to send out a special word to you on this podcast to let you know that we are going to start opening up our show to questions. We really want this podcast to be something where we engage with you, our listeners. We love you. We love that you're listening. And we really want to have a conversation with you. And so when we do the chaotic peace portion of this show, we would love to be able to engage with topics that you care about and questions that you have. Questions that you have, maybe something that you're struggling with in life, and it's kind of like a Dear Abby moment where you, hey, Kate and Colby, could you help me with this situation? Or maybe it's just something you'd love to hear us chat about. Whatever it is, we would really love to engage with you and what you care about. So if you could start sending us requests for that, you can go to thekateandcolbyshow.com. And you can click the top right button where it says ask a question, and you can send us anything you want about what you'd like us to talk about and anything you are wondering about. And then you also can go to our Facebook page and you can just message us right there. So the Kate and Colby Show has a Facebook page, and you can just click message and send us that directly in that way. So we would just love to engage with you in that way. We really want this to be something that you're a part of, and we feel like opening it up this way to have this portion of the show be that kind of format would be a really great way to do that. So send us your questions, let us know what you're thinking about, what you're struggling with, and you can be anonymous if you like, or you can include your name when you send us a message, but then, you know, in parentheses, please don't say my name on the show. You know, it's not like we're going to say your first and last name, but whatever you feel about that, just let us know, and we would just love to engage with you in any way we can. Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Colby.
And on today's show, I'm going to talk about how it's important to use your voice, even if it gets clunky with the results.
Then Kate and I are going to have this discussion talking about how the heck do you stay sane in the world today.
And then we'll wrap it up with some anecdotes and some work that's making us come alive.
We call this part of the show Spiritual Nuggets, and the goal is to offer a bite-sized word of encouragement and inspiration to nourish and care for your soul.
So I've spent the better part of my adult life really working on trying to figure out my voice, who I am, what I feel about the world, how I see things. What are my opinions and views? What's my lens? And also then how to use that voice, how to go out in the world and say what I think. And I think that's a journey that a lot of us go on. When we're really little, when we're 2 and 3 years old, we don't struggle finding our voice. We know what we want. We know what we think. We know what we like, and we voice that. But then as we grow older, we really experience life and the world and really have this experience of culture kind of speaking into who we are for us and kind of trying to tell our story for us. We lose our voice, a lot of us, some more than others. And it becomes difficult in early adulthood as we go out on our own to even recognize who our voice is. When I get quiet with myself, what do I actually think? What do I actually believe? What are my opinions? Sometimes we take on the opinions and beliefs and feelings of other people in our lives or of the culture at large, and we get lost. And then we really don't know how to use our voice to speak life into our own story and then out in the world. So that's definitely been my journey. I've done a lot of work around that, of figuring out who I am and what I think, just who and what my voice is. And then, of course, that leads to then using my voice in the world. And so that's been a real journey for me. I've read all the books and done all the work and all these practices and lots of therapy around it. And it's just been a real beautiful thing for me to figure out what I actually think, not what I think people want me to think, or what everybody else is saying. So that's been really beautiful. And for the last few years, I've kind of almost forgotten about the struggle a bit because I've settled into the practice of knowing my voice and using my voice. But real recently, just in the last couple of months, I've realized that there was this last little hurdle around recognizing my voice and using it, more around the using it, of speaking up when it's important and using my own beliefs and thoughts to frame my own life. There's this last little hurdle that I didn't realize was hanging on that was there, but I was getting this point of frustration around not being able to figure out why I was struggling with certain things that I had to say and was holding back still. And I realized that that last little hurdle was that we so often connect outer circumstances to whether it was okay to use our voice or not. So what I mean is that I'll speak something and what happens from that, the consequences of me using my voice. So if I speak into a relationship and that relationship fractures as a result, if I said a truth that needed to be said and that relationship fractures, if I make a decision at work or at home and something difficult occurs directly from that practice of using my voice, I take those outer consequences, those outer circumstances, and view them as proof that I didn't correctly use my voice, that must have been, I must have got it wrong, that wasn't really what I was supposed to say. And I've been really meditating on that and thinking through that and realizing that we believe that so much that mistakes and struggles are inherently bad. That's just kind of our cultural thing, that to struggle is bad, to make mistakes is bad. And so if that happens when I use my voice, I connect it back to, oops, that was bad, and I shouldn't have used my voice, or my voice was wrong. Maybe that opinion I shared was actually wrong because things didn't go well from there. And I'm having to take a step back and realize that that's not actually true, that the more we use our voice, actually, and the more in touch we are with our voice, probably the more mistakes we'll make and the more our life will kind of fall apart, maybe even a little bit. Things will unravel, will cause some ruckus, because that's life. That's a part of speaking into a world where there are millions of other voices and so much going on. And mistakes are how we learn and grow and become, and life is messy, and it is not the world's way of saying you were wrong when things don't go well. So I can't look at my circumstances and go, yep, I shouldn't have said that. I knew it. I knew I shouldn't have said that. It doesn't mean that I was wrong about what I felt inside. If I needed to tell my husband something and he didn't like it and then we fought, that doesn't mean that I shouldn't have told him that thing. If I said something on Facebook and it was clunky, and from there was a whole discussion around, wow, okay, you kind of said that wrong. That doesn't inherently mean that I shouldn't have used my voice in that way. In fact, maybe it was a really good thing because maybe I learned and I grew and others learned and grew with me. And maybe we even built some community around that. I think of how I've been listening to a lot of prominent activists in the world these days talking about how often allies in the world will not say something when they know something's wrong. So something bad happens in the world, some racist act, some violent act, and they don't say anything. Or they're sitting around the table and someone says something misogynist and they don't say anything. And these activists will talk about how that usually comes from a place of feeling like you might get it wrong. You don't speak out because you might get it wrong. And they're trying to encourage people to, you know, speak out anyways and go ahead and get it wrong. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't have spoken up. It doesn't mean that your voice was inherently wrong. You might have made a mistake along the way, but the voice itself is not the problem. You speaking up is not the problem. So I just want to move to a place in my life where I don't attach my outer circumstances and the mistakes that come along to the idea of, oops, I shouldn't have said anything. I'm just going to move forward and say things and know that I will mess up and it may not be right. But damn, it's a lot better to do that and grow from that experience, because you won't grow if you just keep quiet.
This is the part of the show we call Chaotic Peace, where we explore some of the more chaotic parts of life, from marriage to parenting, relationships, community, and religion, and we share some ideas on how you can find more peace.
Hi, babe.
Hello.
How's it going?
I'm tired.
Are you?
Yeah.
How come?
We had a...
Do you have a reason?
I do. We had that super late staff meeting last night.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Which, remember when our life was super late staff meetings?
All the time.
Every week?
Like, yeah.
One night every week? We did that for like 3 years.
Yeah, we moved away from that, and then we did one like as a out of the blue, not normal thing last night, so we're tired.
Yes.
It was fun though.
It was fun and productive and good, and yeah. I'm super stoked for
We work with our friends, and that's fun, right? They say don't work with your friends, right? But we do. Do they say that?
I think they do say that, and I think they have good reasons for saying that.
We love it though. Well, yeah, it's good.
I think there are ways in which that can really blow up, but it's worked well for us, I think, for the first 3.5 years of sojourn. It's but yeah, good. So I'm tired. And then
what else do you have going on this week?
Counting down until my alarm goes off at 4:30.
Oh, so you're tired and then you're getting up.
I'm tired and then I know that I'll crawl in bed tonight. I don't really sleep when I know that I have to wake up early for the airport. Like,
oh, that affects your falling asleep.
I don't know why that is. So I'll probably just lie there and wait.
Not surprising, but I'm the opposite from you in that. I just fall asleep faster because I know I only have so much time.
Oh man. Yeah, I don't know why. I'm really good at sleeping, except for those situations. So yeah.
Why are you getting up at 4 a.m? I mean, I know why, because I'm your wife. I'm married to you, but we're talking into a microphone right now. So I'm
glad you clarified that. That would have been awesome. I would have been like, well, Kate. No, I'm heading to Chicago for a couple days, and I'm really excited about it. It's called the Open Network. It's this organization I've been a part of for a couple years now.
Yeah, wow.
And we exist to create faith conversations around things that are of interest to progressive Christians. And then we try to resource progressive Christian churches all around the country. Because churches like us, Sojourn, we're out there. They're out there. There's just not very many of us, but we're out there. And we're not really connected to anything. We're just like the
denominations, really.
Yeah, no larger affiliation or network. So the Open Network is like the junk drawer in your kitchen. You know, all the church, all the things that don't have a place.
You're calling us junk?
A little bit. Yeah. And we're like the egg beater.
Cool.
Or the avocado multi-purpose tool, which I love to use, by the way. You don't really like to use that. You prefer...
You bought it for me. You put it in my stocking at Christmas, and then I don't use it.
Never
you use it. Actually, that's happened with a few things that you buy for me and put in my stocking, and then they become your favorite things that I never touch.
But okay, this is actually really nice that there's a microphone. You have to respond. Why don't you like the avocado? Why don't you use it? It's a great tool. Why don't you use it?
Oh, I mean, you know me. I always choose the messiest way to do things. I don't know why that is. I just do.
You grab like a sharp steak knife, which you don't need. You just need like an edge to into that avocado.
Okay.
So you're already like taking your hand at, you know, putting it in danger.
What's happening right now? And then, my avocado cutting skills are being ripped apart.
I've never seen someone cut an avocado like you. You do it like...
Oh, I know. You hate the way
you do it like the equator of the earth.
I know.
And you create like a freaking Russian doll thing.
The nesting dolls?
Yes.
I do that with avocados.
You nest your avocados.
No, I do. I like it that way.
That's fine.
So I do that. So you do it the normal hamburger way. Style? Hot dog style? You do it hot dog style. I do it hamburger style.
That's right.
I never understood the difference between those two. I have issues.
Between a hot dog and a hamburger? You never understood the difference?
Yes.
Totally. I can help you with that later.
When used to figure out whether your paper was vertical or horizontal.
You have
that
other gifts.
I couldn't figure it out.
You have other gifts.
Is a hamburger vertical or horizontal?
Okay, but once you get the avocado open, the point of the tool is you can scoop right along the inside edge of the peel.
Mm-hmm.
And get like all of the avocado out.
Yes.
And then when it comes out, it's sliced. Like you have slices ready for
you. Okay, so that's why you like it. And then what I do is it's
quick, clean, and efficient. Yep.
I cut it horizontal. I don't know. The opposite way of you do. And then I dump it upside down and I squish it out.
Dear Lord.
It almost becomes guacamole.
Yeah. You squish it.
I do. The messiest way possible. What is happening right now? What do you want to talk about on Chaotic Peace this week? Avocados and going to Open Network.
So Open Network is like the junk drawer in your kitchen.
Okay.
And all these progressive churches, we have no other home, so we are finding each other. So that's what I'm going to.
That's awesome.
Is to continue to figure out how can we resource these churches? What role can we play for churches like us around
that's
the country?
So, cool. So we'll miss you.
Yeah, thank you. I'll miss you too. And if you're listening to this out there, by the way, and you are part of a progressive Christian church that is not connected to an affiliation, please find us.
If you're in the junk drawer,
if you find
the avocado tool.
Yes, please. If you are a broken handled spatula, we have a home for you. The Open Network. Okay.
Cool. So you had a question for us, right, babe?
I had a question for you that then I thought us could talk about it. Okay. So I'll start with home pest control.
Okay.
So
is this going to be similar to the avocado drawer, or are we moving in a different direction?
This is next level. Okay. This is good. This is really good. That was elementary. Okay. So you know how when you have a bug guy or a gal, I should not discriminate, come out to the house.
Yeah.
And they do their thing where they walk around the house and they knock down the cobwebs and they do all the spraying. And then they leave and they give you your bill. Do you know what they say? You know the warning they give you?
Oh, that there's going to be more activity for a while they go away.
So you'll notice some increased activity. Now, the truth is the bugs are always there. It's not like the spraying makes more bugs.
Right.
But the spraying becomes an inciting incident where now the bugs that you have always seen become manifest and seen a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about that and how it feels like right now in our, I'll say a world, but maybe just more in America.
Yeah.
It feels like the bug person has just sprayed. And there are some things that have risen to the surface that make it feel like there are lots of really bad things happening right now. There's probably always bad things. We know there's always bad things, but sometimes it feels more pointed. And so we've had intense hurricanes that have caused mass destruction and deaths. The shooting in Las Vegas was a couple weeks ago. It feels like there's a lot going on right now.
Yeah.
And the tendency, I think, can sometimes be to turn to despair, to turn to hopelessness, to feel like the world's going to hell in a handbasket. We're all just screwed.
Yeah.
So the question I have for you, because I think this is something that you have spent a lot of time thinking about, writing about recently and practicing as well, is taking care of yourself in these times. When it feels like the world around you is crumbling, what can you do to not go crazy? What can you do to stay sane? I guess, so there's my question. So bug guy, to craziness in the world, to what can you do? What are some things that we could do right now to stay sane amidst all of this insanity?
Yeah, I'm really glad you're asking that question for us. It's a really good one. Yeah, so I'm super grateful you're bringing up the conversation. I think that we have a real deficit of in our world, and especially the United States of America, in like talking about our mental health. Like we all have mental health. Like we all need to be mentally healthy. It's not something that is specific to one people group, right? Like, yes, there's mental health issues. So people have a unique mental health issue, but all of us have at mental health, right? Like we all have,
yeah, that makes sense.
You know what I mean?
So and like, by default, we're not just good, I imagine.
Right. I think that's what I'm trying to get. Yes, exactly. That's what I'm trying to get at is like, we all need to take care of our own mental health. Like that's a thing and a practice that we should be talking about all the time for everybody. But we're not even good at talking about it for those who have a little more need in that area. And so then we really don't talk about it well for like all of us as a whole, as human beings who need to be taking care of our mental health, if that makes sense. So I'm just really grateful that you're bringing it up. And I am a person who maybe struggles a little bit more with mental health issues. I have struggled with depression and post-traumatic stress and anxiety in my life. And so, yeah, I've done a lot of work there. But even when I have those things really in check and I'm doing well there, I just think it takes a lot of work to, as you said, just an average person in our country with so much going on to stay sane, to do well. So I think the first thing that comes up for me of things that we can do, to get granular about it is, staying educated and informed about what's going on without going overboard, without taking in too much, sitting on our phone way too often.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So staying informed, but not too much.
Yes.
Okay. What does that mean?
Well, I don't think the human brain was So, I mean, obviously the human brain is always changing and evolving and growing and adapting to our world. So our world is changing in that we're able to get more information and faster all the time right now, right?
Yeah.
So that's changing. But the human brain, I don't think, has adapted to that well yet. And then I would add even the caveat of, I don't know that I want our human brains to adapt to that world. I don't know that that's a good kind of adapting. I don't know that that would be healthy for us. So I just don't think our brains were meant to function that way of taking in so much all the time, of just constantly having access to everything that's going on in the world. It's good to be informed. It's good to know what's going on. You don't want to have your head in the sand. I think everybody listening would know that we don't feel that you should stick your head in the sand. So I don't think I really need to disclaim that too much. But I don't think we were meant to know everything either. I think I've really been conscious lately of how much I'm a human being and not God. And I can't handle knowing everything there is to know, and especially to ruminate on those things all the time, to like constantly be. So like I'll find out about a current event, and then I will sit on my phone the entire day finding out what every single person I've ever known thinks about that current event. I could have stopped at just finding out about the current event. But instead, I got to know what CNN thought about the current event, and then what Colby Martin thought about the current event, and then what my grandmother thought about the current event, and then what, you know what I mean? So we get too many voices,
and
too many videos,
why this
too
person
much stuff.
Is not talking about the current event.
Yes, and then not liking the way this person talks about it, and it's just too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. Yeah. And I'm conscious of what that does to our sanity. And then I also wonder how it robs from us the energy that was meant to be put towards other things.
Wow.
So I'm worried about us, honestly. I'm really worried about us as a culture in our mental health in that specific area of how much we're doing that, and how, if we're all doing that as adults, how our kids are just going to go a direction.
Because that'll be like a normal. It's like the new normal for them. Is to just have that much information at your fingertips and to always be having.
Yes.
It.
Yes. And so they will do that adapting thing that I'm concerned that will do that. I don't think is actually the good kind of adapting.
It's like boiling pasta.
More sweet analogies from the kitchen.
So the brain, cause you were saying like the brains, we like can't hold, maybe we weren't designed to hold all that.
Yeah.
So if the brain is like a boiling pot, and you fill it up with water, you know, you can put in, you know, I don't know what the ratio is, but half amount of noodles to however much water you have, and that cooks it well. But if you add more pasta noodles, it's going to degrade the quality of the cook. Like, you have to have a lot of water for the pasta that you put in. If you put too much pasta in, the noodles are going to turn to mush, and it's going to be gross, and it's not going to work.
Sure, baby.
So I'm hearing you say, like, control how much pasta you put into your brain.
Yes,
otherwise, it'll just turn to mush, and it's not good for anybody.
Yeah, so I'm trying in my life right now to set certain specific amounts of time, certain times of the day that I do check in. Like, I don't want to just say, I'm going to be on my phone less, because I know that that won't really work for me. So I try to just decide that in the morning when I first wake up, I check to see what's going on. Because a lot of times you do, you wake up in the morning, you find out that the night before there was a shooting, and you want to know that right away. You don't want to just spend the whole day unaware that the whole world is dealing with something you want to be a part. So I like to check for news in the morning and then take a good long break through the day. And then I would love, honestly, to make it all the way to the evening without checking again, but I often check midway through and then again in the evening. But I'm trying to have specific times that I check in rather than
anytime you grab your phone.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
So boundaries about when you expose yourself to what might be happening in the world.
Yeah.
I like
and then
that.
Just really quickly being aware if something really bad did just happen. Okay, I know about it. Now I need to move on with my day. Not move on emotionally, move on with how much I'm taking in about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where I'm at with that.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay. What else? How else can we take care of ourselves to stay sane?
Yeah, that leads me to the next thing that I've been thinking about. When the Las Vegas shooting that you referenced earlier happened, I was conscious right away of my need to change the way that my day would happen from that point. When I got that news, I wanted to do my day differently. I think that the minute we get news like that, we begin to grieve. And I don't think that we grieve well in our country, in our world, but especially our country. I don't think we grieve well. I think we just move through things. And so I knew the second that happened, okay, I want to spend my day grieving. And I actually wrote a Facebook post to, it was actually specifically to our church. Like as a pastor, I just wanted to tell our people what I thought would be a good way to spend the day. And I just encouraged people, because I was encouraging myself, to spend the day cozy. I was encouraging people to understand that it's okay to comfort yourself. Like we need comfort when we're grieving. Like if you're in grief, you need comfort. But we often wait for that to come from some outside source. Okay. But it's actually okay and good and needed to comfort yourself.
Wow.
So I recognize right away that I'm going to be drinking a lot more tea that day. I'm going to stay in my pajamas. I'm going to ditch some work that I should have got done, and I'm going to be okay with that. That it's a grief day. I'm going to call it a grief day. I'm going to cuddle with my kids a lot more hugs and kisses. I might watch a show that, is like a, how sometimes shows can be comfort food for you. Like, comfort food. That's another one, but just cozy things, whatever cozy means to you. Like some people, you know, when they think of cozy, they would think of something totally different than me. Like I'm going to light every candle in the house and keep it darker. And, I think I do a lot more stereotypically cozy things, but some people would look different. And then some people can't change their day entirely. Like they can't, like I'm lucky. I'm self-employed. I work from home and I can do that. Some people like have to still go into the office. And so I was encouraging people to think outside the box, get creative about their cozy. Maybe they look at extra pictures of their kids that they have on their phone. So they're not taking information, but they're looking at comforting pictures. Maybe you look at videos of kittens. Maybe that's you. Maybe you go for a run. Maybe you sit closer to your coworker, but whatever way you can get cozy and be cozy. But the idea is to comfort yourself, to self-soothe. Like that's a natural, really natural human thing that we have shied away from and forgotten how to do.
Yeah. So that's, as you say that, I can feel myself, the part of me that, you know, isn't super comfortable with emotions in general.
Yeah.
I can feel me be like, no, that just feels like we're checking out and we're ignoring and we're not engaging with the pain. But I know that's not what you're saying.
Yeah.
I know that you're saying that practicing that does not have the end result of you are just ignoring it, sticking your head in the sand.
Yes. It has the end result of, because you didn't stick your head in the sand. You know, you already know what's going on. You're just taking time to move through it. It actually is a way to make sure that you aren't just moving mindlessly through the motions and not engaging. It's a way to make sure that you do stay in check and know.
Let yourself feel it.
Yes.
Okay. As opposed to just plowing through, in which case it's in you. It just never really got dealt with.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And I think leading from that to the next thing that I think we need to do to stay sane when the world is in such chaos and we're so aware of it is to lean into so much grace. This is just still about grief for me. We humans, we grieve as uniquely and diversely as like our fingerprints, as our personalities. Like we are such a unique people anyway, right? Like you and I are so different from each other. So we grieve differently from each other as well. Everybody grieves differently. So just as I was saying, that like whatever your cozy is will be different for you. Like whatever way you grieve will be different for you. So, and nobody acts like a very nice human being when they're grieving. That's part of grief, is that you kind of, a lot of the worst of you comes out. You're a lot less filtered. And so to just be conscious, I just want people to be conscious right now in this time in our world of the fact that we are all like in this state of like mass collective grieving all the time. Mm-hmm. Like we're just constantly grieving. And so to just step back for a second and be super conscious of that, to where I can say, okay, I'm not going to sit here in my grief over this. Like that day that the Las Vegas shooting happened, I was encouraging people to like not spend the day fighting with your spouse about hand towels, because you know that like you're snapping at each other has nothing to do with the thing that you're snapping about.
Yep,
it's really that you're each grieving and you're just driving each other crazy. So to just apply so much grace to each other and yourself in that, if I'm snappy or short, that it's because I'm grieving, to just connect that in our minds, to just know that our actions are really coming from that place a lot of the time. I just think that's helpful to stay sane, to not, cause otherwise you drive yourself to insanity, of like worrying about everybody's actions and getting so annoyed all the time. And then you're just short fused constantly. So it's just helpful to step back and recognize we're all grieving and we're all doing it differently.
Yeah. So. That makes so much sense. So we've got three real practical ways to find some peace in the midst of this particular chaos, which is just how hard the world can be sometimes. Yeah. So you've got to make some boundaries for yourself around how much information you take on. Stay informed, because that's important, but understand that you may not need to know as much and spend as much energy as you need. Healthy boundaries there. Secondly is, especially when moments of intense tragedy and sadness hit, give yourself permission to get cozy and to take care of yourself and to
comfort yourself.
And then third, to the extent that you're able to put on a level of consciousness that I might be shorter and closer to the edge than I normally am.
Yeah.
And the people in my life will be as well.
Yeah.
And we just kind of pour grace on ourselves and pour grace on each other, knowing that we're reacting from places of fear and sadness and grief.
Yeah.
Not from like, I'm really actually mad about the hand towels.
Right.
That's really good. I think, can I add one more?
Oh, please.
This is the only thing, because I think this is kind of new for me, this whole self-care thing. Yeah. So the one tool that I have to not get lost in this stuff is to just practice gratitude. Mm-hmm. And I'm not breaking any ground, obviously. This is a time-honored, well-known practice. But it's really, for me, I think one of the most helpful and grounding things to systematically, from small to large, shoes on my feet, shirt on my back, coffee in my belly, a computer to type on, a phone to text on, a kid to do I Spy with, a wife to chop onions and drink wine with, friends to record and produce podcasts and make music with, a community to build a church around, to just go through and start listing. And it's not, you know, I think again, for me, the temptation would be then to counter that with, oh, well, the people that lost their homes in the flood, or the people that lost their brother in a shooting. Mm-hmm. What am I doing? Am I just being grateful that I didn't have tragedy? I guess that's one way you could look at it, but I guess I have two options. I could be grateful for the things that I have in life or not. And I don't know where the not being grateful for it's going to take me. That's not going to honor people who lost homes.
Not at all.
For me to say, oh, I'm not grateful that I have food. So anyway, I think that's one thing for me that helps me stay sane.
Because you're speaking to how you're making sure that your brain stays in the game of life, right? And gratitude does that for you. It keeps you going, and it probably helps you face the world with more kindness and love and compassion, which the world needs. So you're actually doing a service to our hurting world when you're practicing gratitude, right?
Yeah.
Our family practices gratitude when we notice that our household is in chaos, right?
Like
that's when we stop and pull out the gratitude jar. We notice that things aren't going well. Kids are snapping at each other. We're snapping at each other. And we go, hold on. And we grab the gratitude jar.
We know how to course correct this. Yeah. We know how to find some peace in this chaos.
Yeah. It always works.
God, that makes sense. Can I put you on the spot?
Sure.
And our producer can cut this out if we decide that. But if you're listening to this and you're in a particularly chaotic time and you're feeling particularly stretched or heavy or burdened or sad or in a place of grief, and you don't necessarily have someone that you can reach out to and talk to, someone mm-hmm. to witness your pain, Kate does that exceptionally well. She's a healer in that way to hold you. So you can
email me, kate@sojourngrace.com.
There you go.
Find me on Facebook, Kate Christensen Martin. Message me there.
Yep. So I'll be there. Please know we are here for you. All right. We call this part of the show Coming Alive. And every episode, each of us is going to recommend to you a book, a movie, a song, or something that we've consumed recently that is helping to make us come more alive. Kate, is there a book? Is there a movie? Is there a song? Is there anything lately that's making you come alive?
Yes. So I'm the pastor of the children's ministry at our church. And so I am constantly reading children's books and children's folktales and children's stories and children's songs and children's prayers and all the children's things, which I love. It's perfect for me. That's why it's my job, because I love it. But there is this book that I stumbled upon, a children's book that I've brought to our church and used, that each time I've given it to a volunteer who works with the kids to read, I use it a lot. Cause it's a good one to redo. And each time I do, the volunteer afterwards says, "Where did you get this book? Oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing ever." And, I'm like, I know. So I wanted to share that, cause it is definitely, it makes me come alive all the time. So it's for kids, but, the book is called, Tiger, Tiger, Is It True? By Byron Katie. So it's a book for kids that Byron Katie, developed from her work that she does with adults, some spiritual work she does called The Work. The Work is this, sort of practice that she developed, this really great, self-help spiritual practice that I use in my own life. It's been beautiful and life-changing for me. And so I'll describe what The Work is, and then talk about Tiger, Tiger, Is It True? So The Work is just four questions that you ask yourself in life, in response to a thought that you have. So a circumstance happens and you have a thought in your head. So maybe you have the thought, like a negative thought, like, my life as I know it is over. Like that thought occurs to you. So the first question you ask yourself is it true? And if the answer to that is yes, then you move on to question two. If the answer to that is no, you move on to question three. So let's say I answered, yes, that's true. My life as I know it is over. Then question two is, can you absolutely know that it's true?
I like that. Right?
Can you absolutely know that it's true?
Say it again.
Can you absolutely know that it's true? And then question three is, what happens in my life? How do I react? What do I do when I believe that this thought is true? Wow. What are the actions that come from that? What do I do? How do I react when I believe my life as I know it is over? How do I react? What do I do? You just name that. You answer that question. And then question number four is, who would I be without that thought? Who would I be without that thought? So those are the four questions. That's The Work. And it just helps you move through some really negative thoughts that you can have that really affect how you react to the world and your life and circumstances.
Can I ask a question?
Yes,
if you're able to bail at question two, do you not need question three, or do you
that's the point is okay. If you answered question one, no, then you move on to question three. So is it true? You're like, well, no, but you have the thought, but you can answer.
Okay.
You're like, I know it's not true. So you move on to question three.
Okay.
Of how do I react when I believe that thought is true?
Okay. Got it.
And then four, who would I be without that thought? If I could get rid of that thought. And so the book Tiger, Tiger, Is It True? Is based off of The Work. And it's this cute little story about this, tiger who, you know, he feels like no one loves him and his friends don't like him and everybody's mad at him. And he just, you know, he has a crappy day basically. And then, the thoughts that come up for him in that. And then, I think it's a turtle. I forget who the other character is, but, another character basically asks him The Work, and he moves through it as this like little kid. And it's all, developmentally appropriate to where we've even read it with our threes and fours. And they love it. And then we've also read it for the older class, like the 6 to 12 year olds as well. And it's just great. Really gets them thinking about how their thoughts, are powerful and really affect, their actions. When they think a certain thing, then that matters, right?
That's
so
cool.
It's really cool. I love it. So check it out if you're a parent, to read with your kids. Really helpful in moving them through some of their more negative emotions. And yeah, I love it.
And remember, listeners, all this stuff you can find on our website, KateandColbyShow.com, right? At the resources page. So we'll put a link right to that book and make it easy for you.
Cool. What's making you come alive?
Oh, you know Martin Luther King's, like, one of his most famous speeches, the summer of 1963 at Washington, D.C., called Normalcy Never Again.
Okay.
You know that speech?
Nope.
Of course you don't. Nobody knows that's what it's called.
I know how you talk when you're setting me up. I'm like, what are we getting at here?
That's the point, is no, you don't know that speech. The speech you know it as is the I Have a Dream speech. But as it was originally written, the speech is called Normalcy Never Again.
Wait, so, actually, are you telling actual things?
That's 100% true. No, this is real. This is real. That was the name of the speech.
Okay. I Have a Dream speech, what we call it, I Have a Dream.
What we call it was originally titled Normalcy Never Again.
Normalcy Never Again. Gotcha.
So here's what's making me come alive, is that speech, but the story behind that speech.
Okay.
And the story behind that speech goes like this. So Martin, lifelong preacher at that point.
You guys are good friends. You call him Martin?
Yeah. No. I had nothing to say. So, yes, of course we are. Lifelong preacher, and he, his preaching style, his public speaking style was to memorize, eloquently write and then memorize his speeches.
Mm-hmm.
So very deliberate, very intentional, very methodical, very artistic. And that was his speech style. And, mm-hmm. and you know, it worked really well for him for a lot of years. The summer of 1963, at the height of the civil rights movement, he's standing in front of hundreds of thousands of people on the doorstep of Washington, D.C., in the sweltering heat. And he's got this 7-minute slot, one of many speakers. And he pulls out this speech that him and his team have been working on for days, called Normalcy Never Again.
Oh, I have heard just this one little detail part, but I didn't know about the title.
Yeah. So he goes into the speech and he starts delivering these lines, and they're good, they're fine, but they're kind of anemic.
Yeah.
And they're coming right off the pages of his script.
Mm-hmm.
One of his lines is this. He gets to a point in his script and he says this. And so today, let us go back to our communities as member. I'm sorry, this is what the script said.
Okay.
What he was supposed to say.
Okay.
And so today, let us go back to our communities as members of the International Association for the Advancement of Creative Dissatisfaction. That's what he was supposed to say.
Okay.
But he could tell that the line was rather pretentious and didn't have a lot of oomph to it, and he just couldn't bring himself to say the words. And so instead, as we know that he says and he starts to improvise, go off his script, and he says, "So go back to Mississippi, go back to Alabama." And at that point, his friends who are with him can tell, okay, he's going off script,
mm-hmm.
and a different Martin is coming out. The Martin that sticks to his, words is suddenly, Martin's conscious that that's not connecting with the crowd. These words aren't working. And so he says, go back to Mississippi, go back to Alabama. And then Malia Jackson, who had just recently sang, can sense her friend Martin. And from behind, she says, "Tell him about the dream, Martin." And it's at that moment that Martin goes totally off script.
That's the only part of the story that I remember.
It wasn't in his script. And he starts to tell people about this dream of that one day on the Red Hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood, and that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Those lines were not was not the speech he set out to give that day.
Yeah.
He was going to give Normalcy Never Again. And I learned about the anecdote of that in this book that I'm reading, Messy, The Power of Disorder to Transform Our Lives, in this chapter about improvisation. And it's making me come alive, because every time I hear or read that speech, it just does something to me. But hearing the story behind it, for me, because I so identify with the way that the author describes, Martin's preparation.
The script,
sticking to the script. That is so me. I'm so afraid of improvising.
Yeah.
And to know that the most iconic speech in the last several generations in our country was birthed out of a moment of improvising,
mm-hmm.
for me, elevates the value of improvising to a point where I can't ignore it. There's power. People can, I think, perceive when someone is speaking from the heart
mm-hmm.
in ways differently than when they're speaking from like their cognitive, just sort of reading. Even the words could be as eloquent and beautifully crafted as possible.
Right.
But there's like an energetic shift when someone's speaking from a place of conviction and improvising.
Yeah.
And the end of that speech, not the beginning, but the end of that speech is just this beautiful moment of the power of improvisation. So yeah, two things in that making me come alive. The this invitation to maybe flex the improv muscle in me a bit more. And then also just knowing that, you know, Martin was kind of sensing that the crowd wasn't with him. And then his friend said, tell him about the dream. And so he did. He just told him about the dream, spoke from the heart. He knew that dream. He knew what his dream was. He didn't need the words in front of him to tell him that. So
as a preacher, are you inspired to practice that? Or what
I'll
you
tell you what,
about?
When I first read this anecdote mm-hmm. A couple of weeks ago, that very Sunday, I didn't bring my notes up.
Really?
I'm like, I'm going to practice this. And it was terrifying. It was totally terrifying. And I think it went fine.
Yeah.
I think it went fine. I think people afterwards noticed, oh yeah, you seemed different.
Yeah.
But it was exhausting for me, so I haven't done it since.
Yeah.
Natural. But that is that's where I want to grow into. I want to grow into that. I really do. Like, I don't want to just see that as like a one trick pony that I can pull out every once in a while. Actually, I want to become that kind of speaker more than the one that's tied to the lines that I'm really proud of go back to your communities as members of the International Association for the Advancement of Creative Dissatisfaction. I'd write that out and be so proud of it.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I can't wait to deliver that.
Yeah.
And it would just be flat and limp and uninspiring. But
cool.
Anyway, so
I love it.
If you haven't in a while, go listen to that speech and now listen to it knowing that at that point he's going off script and he's just speaking from the heart.
Cool. I love it.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Kate and Colby Show. To learn more about us or hear past episodes, to send us a question or a comment, just visit thekateandcolbyshow.com. And just make sure to subscribe to the podcast while you're there. That would be super easy. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded and produced here in San Diego by Matthew Blake.